Welcome to the Grace Story Podcast, where we introduce you to interesting people and their inspiring stories. From Grace professors, current students, and distinguished alumni, to special guests and speakers on our campus, you can meet new people and hear how they are impacting the world around them. This podcast is recorded and produced at Grace College and Seminary, located on the shores of Winona Lake in the great state of Indiana. This is the Grace Story Podcast. Today's guest is Ryan Carr. Ryan is the Vice President of Player Personnel for the Indiana Pacers. He's a graduate of Indiana University, where he served as a team manager under legendary coach Bobby Knight. Ryan, it's so great to have you on the podcast today.
Man, I'm excited to be here and just looking forward to my day here at Grace. And thanks for having me.
Thanks for investing here on the podcast. I know you're going to be speaking in chapel as well. We're so blessed by that. So I was at a Pacers game last week with my family. We had a blast, so much fun. But here's my first question. What is a player VP of player personnel? What does that mean?
Yeah, well, that means that I help lead the guys and the team that goes out and finds the players. So we're kind of responsible for all the players in the world besides the 15 or 18 that are on our team. So it's a lot of fun. We travel a lot. The draft is certainly a huge responsibility. That's my number one responsibility, is to prepare us for the draft. We've got guys working on free agency and trades. We've got, just actually guys spread around the world, getting their eyes on basketball players.
Well, you've done a good job. obviously, right now, with the team that you've assembled, and I think for us and our family, one of the things we told our kids on the way home was, did you see how they played as a team?
Yeah.
Right? The game we went to, Devin Booker scored 62.
Yeah. Yep.
But the Pacers still won.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of guys who scored and contributed, even with their best player out. So it's neat to just see everyone contributing.
Yeah, we've really put a premium on the type of guys that we have on our team, and that is really showing. It's led the way by Tyrese, who didn't play that game and is just now kind of coming back from his injury. But it's just been infectious. And Rick Carlisle is a coach that believes in that same thing, and in kind of the sum of the, the sum of the individual parts, exceeds, the whole is bigger than the sum of the parts, whatever the saying is. And they live that out. And even going against teams maybe with more overall talent, they just battle and play together and cheer for each other. And if you watch the bench, it's pretty amazing to see at an NBA pro level how they're so together. So we take a lot of pride in that. We love that kind of atmosphere. Makes it fun over 82 games to come to work every day with those guys, and just thankful for all those guys being bought in.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to your story. So you're not from Indiana,
but
you came to Indiana. So tell us just a little bit about where'd the love for basketball come from and what got you to Indiana in the first place?
Yeah, so my stepfather loved basketball, and I was born in the Bay Area in California, moved to the Seattle area when I was in kindergarten. My mom with my stepfather, and he just loved basketball, and we started playing in our garage in like a rubber trash can because I couldn't make a shot in a 10-foot goal. And that's how it started, and we did it together, and he watched a lot of it, the Sonics. I grew up watching the Sonics and college basketball and with him, and just started playing. And I couldn't tell you exactly why I fell in love with it the way I did, but I did from a really early age. I think the first team I was on, this was like 1984. I was 10 years old, and the local YMCA, and really – from that point on, just been something that I've loved. I knew by junior high probably that I wanted to coach or do, I've always wanted to be a part of a basketball team in one way or another. And all these years later, 40 years later almost, I haven't had a year where I haven't been a part of a team since. It's pretty remarkable. And the story coming to Indiana, I transferred high schools in the middle of my junior year, which I would not, recommend to anybody, but I did it, and it was the best thing for me. However, the school that I went to, I went from a school where the team was not that great and where I played quite a bit to a team that was very good. And I didn't make the team as a senior, but ended up being able to help that team. And one of the players on that team, a good friend, his grandfather owned a company that did business with Coach Knight. And as I wanted to go to college, I was writing letters to all these different colleges because I wanted to coach. I wanted to learn. And the only letter I got back was from Coach Knight, from like 30 letters I sent out to everybody. And it was no promise at all. But anyway, my buddy who played at Rogers High School, his grandfather knew Coach Knight. And he had heard about what I was doing and trying to do that. And he talked to Coach Knight for me and got it all set up to come to Indiana to be a manager for him. And I had never been to Indiana. I certainly knew how important basketball was. I had read A Season on the Brink, back to my stepfather. He was a Marine. He loved Coach Knight. He was the one that wanted me to send a letter to Coach Knight. Just really now I look back at it differently. It's a lot of God's providence in this whole entire thing. I'm thinking of it as we're driving up here today, driving through small town Indiana, thinking, my word, how did I get here? Like, and with opportunities to come here and speak, and the providence of it all, and this whole journey through basketball is not lost on me. How remarkable and wild it is.
Hopefully you've seen the movie Hoosiers.
A million times.
Well, yeah. My dentist is Raid. So,
no way.
Yeah, right here in town. His wife's on our board.
Oh, my gosh.
Steve Holler is Raid, and he's kind of a local legend here
of
in
course.
Warsaw area. So,
oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
A good connection there. Kids came here to Grace. So, yeah, that's
oh,
awesome.
Oh, wow.
So I'm interested in kind of where's the faith journey come into this? Because I, as a guy who loves basketball and, will be coaching my kid in YMCA tonight, it's one of those sports in general in our society. It's so easy for it to become an idol.
Oh, man.
And so where does your faith journey intersect with your interest in basketball?
Yeah, so again, thinking back, looking at life totally different than I didn't grow up in a Christian household. I had two grandmothers who were saints that would kind of take me to church any chance that they could. But in my house, we weren't. My parents kind of just kept that out. They weren't averse to it necessarily, but they weren't pro it. But yet, God placed all these different people. My best friend in high school was a strong Christian. His family, I'd go to basketball camps, Christian basketball camps that my parents would send me to because they were excellent camps, NBC camps, but they were Christ-based. There was all these different things that God had kind of put in my path. I had worked for the Pacers after college, went and coached in college for 4 years, came back to the Pacers as a scout. So this was the 2003-2004 season. And it was an interesting time. I had kind of this dream job, traveling around, watching basketball all over the place. My favorite school, we mentioned Indiana, my favorite school growing up was North Carolina. So March of 2004 was going to be the first time I was ever going to be able to see a game in the Dean Dome. And I was super excited, just pumped. And so I walked into the Dean Dome to sit down and immediately like got cold sweats, just a huge hole. I mean, it was odd and all in my mind thinking, this is it. Like, this is it? This doesn't get it. Like, this isn't what I thought it was gonna be. So I get home and my wife, Kim, we still joke about it to this day. Again, it was right before my 30th birthday. She called it my quarter-life crisis. and I knew I busted in the door from that trip, and I was a wreck. And I walked in, and I didn't even say hello. I said, we have to find a church. And that was that was the start of the Spirit, you know, moving me and regenerating my heart. And from that point on, almost for the next 20 years, it's been a really good journey. The first part of it was rocky, as you're trying to kind of wean yourself a lot from the world. I would say the next real transition was through COVID, and just a lot of reorientation of our family. But you know, what a great blessing to raise my children from their birth, you know, to love the Lord. And I think for Kim and I, you know, they're just kind of the legacy of, we both grew up in divorced families. We both are just really committed to trying to start kind of our family trees over, you know, for these kids. And so, it's been a journey, highs and lows, just like everybody, trying to navigate it in a world like you mentioned, has been an evolution for sure, and a definite practice of maturing in my faith. And I try to, you know, try to be more obedient and more faithful every day. And I think an opportunity to come be here with you today is, you know, to God's glory, evidence of that.
What is living your faith look like when you're in, you know, the NBA, and of course around, right, star players, and you're recruiting, and you're traveling, and you know, I think sometimes we can idolize even the job you have, oh, that's got to be amazing. Yeah. You're like, well,
yeah.
So I'd love you to share a couple things. I even think about our students who are sports management majors, who this is what they want to do, or future students who want to come and be a part of sport.
Yeah,
obviously, great ministry opportunity. But so, one, what is faith look like? And then I want to move on from that and talk a little bit about, you know, how do you succeed in a career like this?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about like faith on a daily basis in your role.
Yeah, I think it's obedience, and I think it's, you know, integrity. I think it's, you know, making choices. I travel a ton, spend a lot of time on the road. How do I spend my time when I'm traveling? Who am I spending it with? You know, I don't go to a hotel bar. I don't, I'm very careful about, you know, my language. I'm careful about habits where, you know, being in the Word, reading good books as well, and making sure that, you know, I'm just not out there, staying connected. Thank goodness for, you know, the invention of texts and all that, where, you know, God has continued to place some really amazing people in my life that, you know, hold me accountable as I travel, having a great wife that does the same, and with a lot of trust, you know, and just making sure that, you know, who I am, a husband, a dad, all that is the same. I've never wanted to live like double lives, which would be fairly easy to do. But the Lord is good, and I think as I've matured in my faith, and He's, you know, as sanctified, the sanctifying process has gone on, it's been a little easier. And I think, you know, in any job, the first time you feel like you're standing up for your faith, or you're, you know, it's scary a little bit. You're not sure. I've done it, you know, where I work, and called a meeting that I felt like I needed to speak up for some others who maybe aren't in a position to do it. And it is scary, but you know, God is good, and those moments are redeemed by Him, whether the result I want happens or not. You know, in terms of just working with others, by showing respect, I lead a team of guys that are all over the place in terms of what they believe and where they are faith-wise, all the way from, you know, pretty strong Christians to having no interest at all. But you treat them all with respect. I think because of my faith, I hopefully lead them in a way that is different from what others might, or maybe what they've experienced elsewhere. And you know, and that's all Christ. So, you know, that I guess that's a general, non-specific in some ways answer, except I just go through my day every morning. I don't want to deny Christ. So how that looks each day is probably a little different because each day you're faced with different situations and different decisions. And I just do my best, and then I repent and start over when I need to, right?
That's exactly how, be faithful, right?
Yes.
Faithfulness in the same direction over a long period of time, and that's true for any industry, that's true for any job, but like you said, there's particular either temptations or challenges that come with any role and responsibility for you. That certainly is going to be the case in the venue that you have, which also produces a great platform.
No question.
And so what is that, what sort of, how has that platform allowed you to elevate Christ?
Man, well, people are interested in what I do for a living, and it's a very interesting and unique position that I have no idea other than God how I'm a 5'7", non-athletic, lucky to have played like high school JV player. So to go through life and end up working for Coach Knight and Larry Bird and all these different people, and to call them friends and colleagues and to sit at tables with them and make basketball decisions is somewhat like unbelievable. And yet in those situations, however unbelievable, you know, they have counted on me for different things. So there is some level of respect there, even if I think it's totally absurd. it's, you know, it's easy to give it from me to them, but, you know, there is that way. So, yeah, I don't know how it's all happened. I'm going with it. You know, one of the things, particularly the last couple years, is I've just said that I don't want to say no to an opportunity to platform Christ. Like, you know, and there's been several. This is actually a big one for me. This is the first chance in chapel to sit in front of, you know, 1,000 people and speak to them like this.
Yeah.
I've spoken to some teams. I've spoken to some smaller groups, some different things, but, you know, super humbled by a chance to be here with you guys and, you know, preach the word of God. Like that blows my mind. But I would never say no to it. Like,
right.
I can't do that at this point. So yeah, here we go.
I so appreciate your humility and even preparing for, you know, today in chapel, you know, I'm going to ask you some questions about your work because you said, well, I kind of just want to talk about the word of God.
Yeah.
And you're so humble about what you get to do. So I'm going to have to draw that out of you a little bit, which is what a beautiful picture that, you know, got to draw out what you do and the value of it. And what you want to elevate is not you. You want to elevate Christ.
Yeah.
And to be able to do that on a daily basis in your role is just an awesome thing. And I think a great example, you know, for our students, for our student athletes of what does this whole sport thing actually mean?
Yeah.
It actually means, you know, you have a platform for Christ. So I want to ask you kind of as we wrap up, those who want to get into sports of any shape, form. Most of us are, you know, my kids still think they're going to the NBA, but soon they're going to realize, you know, that may not happen. And so what would you give as advice if you're in front of, you know, a group of college students or high school students who say, you know, I really want to do something in the world of sports?
Yeah.
What advice would you give them to help them along their way?
Yeah. Patience and persistence are, you know, two very important things. You know, whatever opportunity you can get, an internship with a minor league team, with whatever you can get in, take it. That was my story a little bit. I ended up getting an internship with the Pacers, you know, making, I think it was $30 a home game, like $200 a month to get a chance. And then we just figured it all out beyond that. That doesn't pay rent, not even 1997. So we had to figure it out. But don't say no. And don't, you just got to get a foot in the door, and then you've got to do great work. You've got to be the front office of a team is like what you see on the court or on the field. Like, they want teammates. They want people that are going to put the team ahead. It's hard. It's competitive. There's a lot of people that want to do it. So when you get an opportunity, make the most of it, and don't make it about you. Like, so many, we've had great success with the interns that we've brought in. But the ones that haven't made it think that, you know, come in with an I or a me attitude. And that's just in any business, right? Like, if I'm, you know, interning in somebody's accounting firm, and you come in thinking that you know the IRS code better than everybody else, like, it's, you probably don't. So you've got to go in there with humility and work, earn trust, and that'll start opening doors. I know that when we haven't been able to hire our interns, when they've done a good job, we help them other places. It's a lesson in perseverance and patience, kind of outlasting others. It's certainly endurance is a big deal. You're not going to make a lot of money because it is so competitive for a long, long time if you're able to kind of work your way up the ranks. So it's so fun. I mean, I've never worked a day in my life. There are some early mornings when I have to go to the airport that, you know, at almost 50, when I was 30, it was a little easier. At almost 50, you know, some of those cold mornings are a little harder to leave the family. But, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, really. So, you know, I'm writing reports and trying to figure out who we're going to add to our basketball team. It's a lot of fun. You're doing it with a lot of great people. But, yeah, just perseverance. And don't – you've got to be willing to move anywhere almost. There's so few opportunities. When you get one, you can't turn it down, and then just make the most of it.
Awesome.
Yeah, earn trust, I would say. Just it's a good philosophy for life.
Patience and perseverance,
yeah, man,
equals trust. That's,
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so last thing, have to ask the question. Tyrese Haliburton, give us one fun fact about the star player for the Pacers right now.
So in this is a great venue for that. He's really, you know, I think Christ is really pursuing him. Since he's come to our team this past year especially, he's really led the charge on probably strengthening our chaplain ministry on our team. He's a Pied Piper. He has joy that exudes from him. He plays like it. Guys love playing with him. And I'm prayerful that that'll also, you know, become apparent, you know, in his faith. It's been a fun thing to see, in particular this year, and talking to our team chaplain a little bit, just at his, you know, his interest and where he's going. So in this, you know, in this platform, I think that would be the most interesting and very cool thing.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan, thank you for joining the podcast and for coming to our campus today and sharing your experience and expertise and story, and most of all, your love for Jesus.
Man, thank you.
And thank you all for listening to the Grace Story podcast today. Thank you to Avery and Rick for their work producing the podcast. And if you could like, comment, subscribe, share with others who would be inspired as well, we would love that. If you have questions or comments you'd like to share with us, you can reach out to podcast@grace.edu. Until next time, live your best Grace Story today.